Hey, everyone. It's rare we get an intriguing guest like I have today, John Sanai, futurist, thought leader, advisor, consultant, writer. What have I missed, John? You do so much.
Entrepreneur as well. But Jess, you know, I think when your brain is active, you have to apply yourself as widely as possible just to keep the juices flowing. So, yep, love all of it.
Well said. And in this day of AI, it's ever more important to keep our brains active, which is why I have so many questions. Before that, maybe introduce yourself, your purpose, your mission, your body of work to the viewers in your own words.
Well, look, I started off as just an entrepreneur in my life. And after a very painful bankruptcy in my early 30s, I began the journey of self-development and trying to figure out what had happened. And I was always naturally an early adopter from a very young age. And by the time I turned 40 years old, I started combining the sort of depth of personal development that I'd gone through together with my passion of trends, specializing and being a futurist and early adopter. And over the last 8 years, I've authored and co-authored 9 books on the cross-section of human psychology, neuroscience, and futurism. And now I'm faculty at Duke Corporate Education and a global expert at Singularity. And I travel the world teaching organizations how to prepare their people and their organizations for the future.
Wow, what an amazing mission. And let's talk about that when it comes to leadership. You know, we're in desperate search for leaders on the political side. We won't get into that. But when it comes to business leaders and entrepreneurs and founders, I mean, what are the attributes, the skills, the outlook that you're trying to cultivate, to encourage, to coach, to mentor? And what's needed in this crazy, topsy-turvy world we find ourselves in?
Well, you know, the truth is that it's become topsy-turvy over the last sort of 20 years or so, and that sort of speed of topsy-turviness is growing ever more. The skills that we have required over the last 200 years of education has been one of familiarity, pattern repetition, pattern recognition, and focused on outcomes in many ways, and has got us quite directed towards that outcome. It's called economies of scale and efficiencies. This has been what most leaders have as a tool set. And it's a fantastic tool set when things are stable, as they have been roughly over the last 200 years. And as it becomes more and more uncertain and more topsy-turvy, we realize that the real skill is not so much what you know, but how you react to change. And our brains are not really wired for this how, but very much about what. And neuroscience is proving to us now that we have between 60 and 70,000 thoughts a day, of which 90% are the same thoughts as yesterday, which means that our ability to see new things ahead of us is very much dulled because of the legacy types of thinking that we've carried with us. And so as the world changes, the how is best described as adaptability. And we've all heard the term, and we've seen many organizations use it as marketing lines, that they are now an agile organization or now an adaptable set of people. But the truth is, the very system that the business is set up in is not adaptable. It's efficiencies, which is exactly the opposite of adaptability. And so we realize that a high level of EQ is required to deal with adaptability and uncertainty. So the real question we need to be asking ourselves is, how do we become optimistic about certainty when our educational system and organizational system has taught us to look for certainty at all costs and bring efficiency to it? So there's a dynamic shift that's required in the way we think about the way we think, because our brains need to naturally become more adaptable rather than becoming wired into a familiarity. So the sort of thing, the skill that leaders need is our proficiency in unlearning to relearn. And this is only brought about by an adaptable way of thinking and an adaptable way of being curious about uncertainty. And both of these are emotional intelligence tricks, because you see, the what is changing at such a dramatic rate that just worrying about the what isn't going to see you become future ready. Your how, your emotional intelligence, and your adaptability become paramount in the way you deal with this level of uncertainty.
Wow, that's a lot to take on. And what a powerful idea behind navigating uncertainty. So, okay, we have a very uncertain world, especially in the business arena. you know, unpacking this will take a long time. There are no silver bullets, but any top level strategies that folks, the leaders, can deploy or, you know, use to thrive in this kind of uncertain world?
Yep. There's two that I can pinpoint. The first one is stop asking your existing people to be both innovative and disruptive. In my world, what innovation means is bringing more efficiencies and modifications to an existing system that incrementally requires more efficiency to brought to it, which is great and it's necessary. But disruption is making your current business model obsolete to create a new business model. And so what we often are doing is putting our executives and teams under pressure to think laterally and think disruptively, as well as making sure that their KPIs are reached on a quarterly basis. And this is really a terrible thing to do, because you're creating schizophrenia within your organization and your people aren't able to do both, which means they do both badly. And so what I've always been researching and thinking about and helping organizations do is, how do you build a jet fighter next to your Boeing? How do you build a tomorrow team, a team of people that are not inside your organization, but sit laterally next to your organization, solving problems for tomorrow, utilizing very different KPIs and outcomes, utilizing new capabilities as well? Because remember, our existing teams and definitely existing boards around the world are not made up of AI specialists or data scientists. They're made up of engineers, accountants, lawyers, and HR specialists and marketers. And all of these skills were exceptionally important in the old world, but are kind of fundamentally flawed for the skills that we require for the future. So that's the first idea I would share, is today and tomorrow teams, exploring the idea of tomorrow teams to help your people think 3 to 5 years ahead while you've got an existing team worrying about the quarterly profits and annual incremental changes. The second piece I would sort of suggest is to look at AI in 4 different quadrants for your organization. Often what we do is we get a lack of implementation after strategy sessions. And the reason is that complexity is the enemy of implementation. Because it's such a vastly complex topic, what we usually do is we try to like not even engage with it as deeply as we need to, because there's just so many different quadrants for us to think about. And what I imagine, what I suggest for us to do is to break AI into 4 quadrants. One, are you doing it for your external customers, or are you doing it for your internal customers? That's sort of the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere. Then on the left-hand side, are you using AI for your customers in today's world, or are you using AI in your organization's world to deal with today's issues? And then on the other side, are you using AI to really upend your industry and create a brand new industry, or are you going to change the way your core offerings change as an organization? And I'll give you some examples. There's a company in Hong Kong that started to use AI to find drugs for people much quicker. They're called InSilico, and pharma.ai has now found 9 new drugs in its first year of trade, whereas the Pfizer's are only doing 4 to 5 because of the expenses. And you can see the ramping up of utilizing AI just for changing your core offering, which is a very different capability to maybe bringing an incredible experience to your customers by using AI to look for patterns that we otherwise couldn't have seen. Very different skills. So the 4 quadrants of AI are important to think about as an executive. Do you have the capabilities? Do you have the enough manpower and focus in each one of these quadrants? And then, are you thinking about your business in today and tomorrow terms? And please do stop asking your existing people to think out the box. It's the most ridiculous term in the world. And the reason is that in 1986, when you asked your people to think out the box, it made a bit of sense. But today, thinking out the box is, can you become a data scientist, a gamer, a machine learning specialist, and deal with issues 5 years in the future from your existing executive team? Which never really works. And so really, it's about deciphering these teams, building up your capabilities to deal with them individually.
I love that perspective on human AI collaboration. And that's really interesting, because techies, geeks like me, you know, at GTC, NVIDIA's big event in San Francisco this week, you know, it's all about speeds and feeds and the biggest, best chipset and the power. And we lose the bigger perspective. How has AI impacted your professional, personal work life and the clients that you serve? You must have seen a lot of organizational impact already, although we're in the first inning of what's going to be a very long ball game.
Well, the very, very first thing is I do think nerds are important to geek out on those things. And I think it's really great that they do. But as an executive organization, how you deal with those changes becomes your superpower. Those chips are going to get smarter and better and faster and cheaper. Mm. How is that impacting your business? How are you shifting it? That's really important. But I also think that how AI has impacted me is I've stopped writing books. I don't believe books are really a thing for the future. One, they're very, very slow. In fact, I wrote a book, my last book I wrote in 2022. It's so outdated because the technology and the things that I was writing about back then are just out now. And so as I'm writing, things are changing at such a dramatic pace. I think books are leaving the same way CDs left. You know, when words become commoditized, they become demonetized and democratized and totally disrupted. And I think bookshops will go the same way CD shops. So that's how it's impacted me specifically. How I've seen my clients impacted by it is absolute fear, is absolute a key, unable to deal with what this actually means, because it's not just a organizational challenge, it's an individual adding value challenge. And it's not only what will my organization do, is what is my job going to be? And what are my kids going to be doing to prepare for this? And Yuval Harari said it best. He said, we will see the emergence of the useless class, which is over the next 5 years, we'll have 2 to 3 billion people become useless because the incremental way of thinking, the ability to see patterns, recognize them, these are all being done better by AI, meaning that many professionals in the services industry are becoming challenged. Now, we're on the emergence now of moving from LLM to LAM, from large language models to large action models. And the minute the large action models really start to catch grip, we're going to see an incredible amount of dissolving of jobs, of dissolving of services and skill sets. And as LAM has become more and more of a thing, I think we're really going to start reckoning with, what do we do with all these people that were trained exceptionally well for an old world? How quickly are they evolving and adding value in brand new ways? And my suggestion to organizations is as quickly as possible, start to build your tomorrow team so we can start to find new ways to add value in new ways over the next coming years as your existing teams have to be retrained, which might not be happening in time to deal with the amount of change coming.
Wow, that is extraordinary. Fear is a mind killer, as quoted in Dune, my favorite movie out there at the moment.
Yes.
You talk about organizational transformation. You know, digital transformation is all the rage. But the reality is most digital and change, transformational change,
don't work
or sort of lose steam or fail. Yeah. Why is that? And what can leaders do to embrace innovation, to embrace change from the ground up versus some, you know, directive?
Yeah, look, I don't think many digital transformations work because the very structure of our organizations is industrial, not digital. You can bring efficiencies to your existing industrial system utilizing digitization, but to actually create a digital business from the ground up has to be done from scratch. And the real great example that we've got right in front of us today is Zara building an exceptional business in industrial times, becoming the kingpins of efficiency and economies of scale, giving us an exceptional experience of fashion around the world. And Shein coming in behind the scenes and eating up market share and watching Zara go from a $19 billion business to a $12 billion business to an $11 billion business while Shein is shooting the lights out towards a $100 billion business. And you got to ask yourself, what happened? And then what happened was, doesn't matter how good Zara becomes at economies of scale, Shein's business model is called economies of learning. And what they do is foundationally different to Zara and is giving us cheaper, better, and faster fashion. Maybe the quality is up for question, but that's only a matter of time to get that fixed as well. But Zara now is shrinking while Shein is growing. And then you got to ask yourself, why didn't Zara come up with Shein? And the truth is because their leaders in those organizations are so addicted to efficiencies and quarterly profits, and their awareness is stuck at such a level they can't see those opportunities ahead of them, because what they think they're doing as a digital transformation is only incrementally making their current business more efficient. Whereas you've got to build things from scratch in a digital way, because ultimately the business models and the capabilities required for the future are vastly different to where we come from. And another example is, why didn't BMW come up with Tesla? Why didn't BMW stay ahead of the game by creating brilliant EVs 15 years ago? Addicted to certainty, familiarity. And the real reason is this neuroscience stat that I quoted earlier is that our brains are stuck in ways of thinking. And as Einstein who said it best, he said, you cannot solve a problem from the same awareness that created it. And so we have exceptionally smart people who have created problems from the Industrial Revolution who are now having to solve them in quantum AI times, who are totally caught with their pants down.
Wow, such an intriguing perspective. A topic near and dear to your heart, neuroscience.
Yes.
We're in a bit of a pickle as far as mental health is concerned, particularly in the workplace. I've been in the enterprise space for 30 years. I've never come across so many just fundamentally down, unhappy people, you know, through the pandemic and beyond. You know, how should companies incorporate a mental health, healthy mind practice or strategy into their culture? And how can we get through this mental health crisis I think we still find ourselves in post-pandemic?
Yeah, look, I think it's going to get worse and worse. And there's a couple of reasons for it. First off, I made a post a little while back on social media, and I said, if you're feeling tired or fatigued, it's not because you are tired or fatigued. There's a sense of betrayal, and the sense of betrayal is towards the system. We have been coaxed and forced into a system from school to religion to organizations to governments, and we were told that we will achieve what we want to achieve by ticking all the boxes and following the system. And now we've arrived on the other side of the system, and we've got Mercedes-Benzes and Uber Eats delivering food to us, but nobody's taught us how to deal with change and emotional trauma. And so now we've got all the trappings of success, and now we have none of the emotional joy that's required to bring about the sustainable amount of joy, ease, contentment. And the real reason behind this is we have created a society that's addicted to something called a high beta brainwave. And a high beta brainwave is one that tells your body you're in danger, addicted to certainty, outcomes, and fueled with adrenaline. This would give you short bursts of energy, but very little skill to be adaptable and lateral in your creativity. So when things were stable, the high beta brainwave was more sort of hidden because things were just in a sort of repetition process. And the minute the repetition has gone out the way and there are no patterns that are repeating themselves and everything is uncertain, the very brainwave that's been created by school, education, organization, and religions is now biting us in the butt because there is no certainty for us to drive towards. So what we literally have to do is stop focusing on IQ and start focusing on EQ, because our EQ has never been taught to us. Our ability to unlearn has never been expressed to us. And in order for us to become prepared for the future, we have to stop thinking about things in logical ways and start thinking about things in emotional ways. Let me just give a little bit of perspective to this
Please.
Idea.
Yeah.
In the agricultural era, for 10,000 years, what we had to do to be successful was follow our forefathers, understand the seasons, and harvest and reap and sow when we needed to. And ultimately, the most important skill we had over the agricultural era was our physicality, because our physicality would let us work the fields once we'd followed our forefathers. For 10,000 years, our physicality was prioritized as the value-adding system that humans gave into the world. But when the steam engine arrived, our physicality became irrelevant, and we moved and shifted the way we needed to add value to the world. And so as the production lines began, our physicality became replaced with following the system, become analytical and logical, become outcome-based, and make sure that you're bringing maximum efficiencies to everything that you're doing. Now that AI has arrived and is now making IQ irrelevant, we have to understand that the skills we need to bring to the world have to shift. And so instead of fitting into the system, because the system itself is crumbling and becoming commoditized and demonetized, we have to now start fitting out the system. This is called accessing your genius, your curiosity, your fascination with the world ahead of you. And when you get to access this fascination, your ability to go deep into it, to share it, to research it, to sell those services based on this deep innate human genius that you've had with you, there is no lack of joy. when you've shut down that level of genius, because school never celebrated genius, and you've been following a system, and the system hasn't really got you to access any aspect of yourself, but a system that requires you to play a role, that in itself is making you unhappy. And so really the way we make decisions about what we want to do, how we prioritize our emotions over our logics, determine the level of contentment and joy we have. So I don't know if it's an organizational's mission to bring joy and mental health to people. It's people's mission to try and figure that out for themselves. And ultimately, and here's the scary part, most of the time when they do access their genius, they will never stay at a corporate or an enterprise. They would go on a different mission. Or if they do, they might stay as a consultant, but not really to give up their whole lives to move into this sort of system. So the very structure itself, when dealing with emotional intelligence and dealing with bringing mental wellness, must also realize that the very structure of the corporate structure itself that prioritizes profits over humans will in itself dissolve when you start to think about things in new ways.
That is extremely deep. And I'm still taking it all in. But maybe in your journey, you know, you've intertwined this personal development thesis with professional success. Yes. I struck out as an independent 10 years ago from big tech and corporate life and haven't looked back. Yeah. Maybe at a personal level, what advice would you give to others who are looking at taking their skills and their mission out as an independent? You know, lots of advice needed probably before embarking on that journey.
Look, I think the thing is definitely don't jump ship until you've got yourself some stability. That's the first thing, right? So you always have to have some level of stability around you. But the truth is, for me, what I have experienced is that the Romans spoke about this thousands of years ago, that we all have a pocket of genii above our heads. And this pocket of genii is sort of got filter systems between us and it based on our belief systems, our behaviors, our habits, our memories, our stories. And if we can clear these filter systems out, we get access to this genius. And when you get access to this genius, everything starts to change. Or Steve Jobs, who famously said it in his Stanford University speech, he said, do not stop until you find it, because once you find it, everything changes. So my advice is, don't think about another MBA or PhD. Do some emotional healing. Do some trauma healing. Do some meditation. Do some playfulness. Get a reverse mentor. Do things very differently to open up your heart and then allow that energy, that passion, that curiosity to drive your behavior forward. It's not a logical process. It's much more an emotional, wavy process. And so what this does ultimately is makes you very unique in your set of skills. And this is the key, because if you think about, I don't know, think about the four consulting groups, the big four, they're all pretty much the same. There isn't much that is different between them. Mm. If you think about Adidas, Puma, and Nike, they're all kind of the same. And if you think about AT&T and Verizon, they're all kind of the same. And the reason is that we've got a surplus society. People have been educated in the same ways, who have been working for companies in the same ways, that are creating solutions in the same ways. We've all got exposure to the same amount of information ubiquitously available to us through TikTok and YouTube and Google, which means that we are commoditized, our level of intelligence. What gets us to stand out is your ability to connect invisible golden dots that nobody else can see and to add value in those ways. And that only comes from you doing the work to clean the filters, to access the genius, to then start to create a curious sort of expression of yourself to figure out what it is that you want to jump towards. And in that way, two things happen to you. One, you're naturally adaptable, because it's always about learning and unlearning inside that role of your curiosity. And two, you become totally unique, because nobody else is thinking about things like I am with futurism, neuroscience, tomorrow teams. Nobody's doing that. I'm doing that. And so now I get to travel the world teaching that because of its uniqueness. And so I think the real trick is, how do you create unique value by accessing your uniqueness and then share it with the world?
A wonderful, inspirational thought. And speaking of that, I mean, you're a young guy, but fast forward, what kind of legacy do you want to leave in a world of futurism, business strategy, insight, et cetera?
Well, Evan, thank you so much. I'm 50 years old. I'm 1 year away from 50. And so I'm feeling younger than ever, to be honest with you. I think time is malleable. I think that we saw over COVID, there was just, we lost all track of structural time. I remember there was a social media term that was running around. Is that, what day is it? It was Blur's Day. Every day was Blur's Day. And so our perspective of time is what ages us. And if we can create a world where time disappears because we're having such a great time, I don't think we age, actually, in a way. When you think about it in quantum terms, if you think about it in Newtonian terms, it doesn't make any sense. But quantum science is replacing that pretty quickly. I think the legacy, I'm far too early to even talk anything about that. But if I can leave people with one thing, is optimism for uncertainty. If you can become an explorer and an adventurer, the future is bright. If you are exploiting and fearful, the future is dark. Doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have. Doesn't matter any of those things. As we move into change, your ability to unlearn, to relearn becomes your superpower. Your ability to add unique value into the world becomes your superpower. And both of these require optimism in uncertainty and an adventurous spirit. And if I can help more and more people to create that level of optimism, then I've done my job.
Wow. Very insightful and motivational. Well, beyond following you on all the channels to consume your, you know, fantastic content, you're on YouTube and LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So fun following you. How else can people meet you or see you, or what are you up to the next 60, 90 days?
Well, I've been, I think, on about 30 flights already this year. Just this month, I've been to Orlando, Manila, Jakarta, Singapore, Australia. Now I'm in Chamonix. Next, I'm in Istanbul. So I can't keep up with my own schedule. So I have no idea where I'm going to be over the next 3 months or so. What I can suggest is the best way to connect would be through LinkedIn and Instagram, but also through our podcast called The Expansive, where we talk about how to live a more expansive life, both in personal and in business, and how do we combine these two to really start to add value in brand new ways as we move into this very, very strange, uncertain world ahead of us. I'm so excited and so really adventurous. I'm so adventurous about figuring out what's next. And I want people to enjoy that sort of level of effervescent energy around uncertainty. And I think the podcast would be the best place to join us.
Fantastic. Well, everyone, check out the podcast. And thank you so much, John, for joining us and sharing your insight and inspiration. You know, it's been a real treat for me. And thanks, everyone, for watching. You know, reach out to John and connect. Thanks, guys. Thanks, John. Take care, everyone.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.